Tell the people what you're here for.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Trouble.
An oppressed person will fight back.
2-4-5
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
We're fighting for justice for Alwi, 'cause no one cares about the pain of his family. Is it 'cause we get our beliefs from TV and dream of living like they do in the movies? Yeah, this is Micaiah, and you're listening to Radio Basics on 105.5 CHRY, revolutionizing radio.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5 FM. That was just one of the latest additions to the Basic soundtrack. Some plugs in there from our good comrade Micaiah, who people may remember from the beginning of this radio show. Used to be a host in Radio Basics, you know, doing her thing big down in Brooklyn.
Doing big things. Yeah, she's back in Toronto now. But yeah, thank you for that plug, Micaiah. Much love.
Most definitely. So today we have a good show for you today. All listeners should be aware of Carabana's on Saturday. You know, one of the biggest events for the year, I think, for the city of Toronto. Mm-hmm. People from around the world, throughout the United States, throughout Canada, coming down there, throughout almost every, you know, area in the city, coming out to the X this Saturday. And so that's a really big festival, and there's some issues there with the funding and with politics involved there, and you know, a lack of balance in terms of funding when we're talking about Carabana versus some of the other, let's say, more, you know, mainstream cultural activities in the city and throughout the country, and the hypocrisy in terms of the funding there. So we're going to be having on Jamu
Nangwaya.
To talk about that. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be having on...
We have Cynthia Palmaria from the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body, and she's going to be talking to us about a conference that's coming up in Montreal, August 13th through 16th, if I'm not mistaken. And that's the International Women's Conference being put on by the International League of People Struggles, and women from all across the country, struggling women, working class women, concerned about the effects of capitalism, imperialism on them, their communities, their experiences. Very much welcome to attend this conference, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. We have Cynthia Palmaria coming on the show. But for now, top headlines. Kabir, take it away, bro.
For sure. So if you didn't already know, one of the biggest leaks in U.S. military history has taken place. Over 90,000 internal documents from relating to U.S. military actions in Afghanistan over the past 6 years have been published by the whistleblower website WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks listeners may remember that was the same website that released the video of U.S. troops firing on civilians in Iraq. People might have seen that video. The video was posted widely, you know, throughout the internet, of U.S. soldiers, you know, deliberately killing civilians in Iraq, and laughing about it essentially as they're doing it. So it's become kind of famous through that, and now it's released these 90,000 pages about the, you know, the mission in Afghanistan. Some of the things that have been revealed: secret black ops special forces, known as the Task Force 373, who were essentially ordered to and continue to operate hunting down and assassinating targets in Afghanistan without any trial or without any kind of detention period. So essentially a militia or just like an extrajudicial force that was employed by the U.S. government to conduct these assassinations. There was, as part of these 90,000 documents, numerous documents that point to hundreds of unreported civilian deaths by coalition troops in bombings and individual shootings, etc., painting kind of this dire picture of the strength, or dire if you're the U.S. military, in terms of the strength of the Taliban, and as well as other, you know, resistance forces within Afghanistan, the strength, the weapons that they had that the U.S. military essentially did not reveal to the public, having different surface-to-air missiles, etc., the extent to which they've been able to disrupt coalition forces in terms of roadside bombings. et cetera, as well as NATO commanders' fear of Pakistan and Iran supposedly fueling the insurgency. So it's interesting. It's an interesting mix, some of which seems to be almost justifying the mission.
There's 90-something thousand documents there. From what I heard in the news today, I was listening to the CBC radio this morning, and they were bringing out some of the stuff that was brought to light by these documents. And it seemed really the leaks that they were bringing out were really just, in a way, kind of justifying the mission. Like, oh, the rampant corruption in the Afghan police. Yeah. This discourse has been playing out in Canada for years now, where it's like, oh, Canada has not been doing its job. Basically, the subtext being, you know, the civilizing mission of the Canadian Army hasn't been doing its job, making sure the Afghan government and the Afghan military are getting their crap together. Like, the biggest scandal is not that there is corruption within the Afghan military, Afghan government. So check that out, man. Do your own research. Look up WikiLeaks and those documents, and if you can get a hold of some yourself, if you're a journalist or if you're just an interested
person, it's on the website. If you type in WikiLeaks, look through it yourself. Don't rely on the media to pick out what information is important for you.
I don't know if
Basics
will be able to read through 90,000 by the next issue, but we'll certainly do some analysis and put out an article for the next issue of the paper.
Most definitely. And, I mean, we also have to realize that the actual reality blatant in Afghanistan is quite incriminating enough for the U.S. military, as well as the Canadian military, that obviously has a huge participation in Afghanistan. In fact, just this Friday, 45 Afghan civilians died in a NATO airstrike, were killed by a NATO airstrike in the Helmand province on Friday. Witnesses told the BBC the attack occurred in broad daylight as dozens took shelter from the fighting. Yeah.
And so, this coming on the heels of a major international summit in Afghanistan, one of the largest one in decades, where basically the world saying that they're going to stay in Afghanistan beyond 2011. So although the Canadian government has told Canadians year after year after year that there will be a troop pullout, first in 2004, then 2006, then 2007, then 2009, then 2011, now they've quietly said 2014. So, and I'm sure until they've pacified any resistance whatsoever to their plans for the future of Afghanistan, there probably will not be an exit of the military for an occupation from there.
Definitely. So, Steve, in terms of other news, and in fact, if you look at Afghanistan, that those 45 civilian deaths were hardly reported in the mainstream media. Yeah. In fact, the only thing that we heard about was the two U.S. troops that were supposedly captured by the Taliban. Mm-hmm. But going on to local news.
In local news, on Wednesday, July 21st, 11 people were arrested at the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty demonstration against the devastating cuts to the special diet benefit by the provincial Liberal government. OCAP is demanding a raise to the welfare rates by at least 55%, the minimum amount required to restore rates to where they were before the cuts by Mike Harris in 1995. While over 300 people took to the streets, a smaller group of people went into the Liberal Party headquarters to deliver a letter to the Liberal Party, quote, demanding full repayment of benefits taken from people living on social assistance, unquote. The 11 people who entered the meeting were met with police and arrested. Two people were eventually released, while the other nine were held overnight at 52 Division and appeared for bail hearings in College Park Court the next day on Thursday, July 22nd, amidst a wide crowd of supporters who attended the hearings to show their support for those arrested. All nine were eventually released on Thursday with sureties and on conditions including not to be within 50 meters of Liberal Party headquarters. This is the latest large arrest and detention of activists, coming only weeks after the mass arrest of over 1,000 protesters at the G20 summit. The police response to OCAP's action makes clear that the G20 crackdown is a sign of broader things to come, as the police are deployed to enforce the harsh austerity measures promised by G20 world leaders last month. Now, while the media was focusing in on the, you know, petty acts of violence carried out by a few tens or a few dozens of individuals throughout Toronto, and while 25,000 people at least marched in the streets opposing the policies of the G8 and G20 world leaders, behind closed doors, those leaders were passing social and economic policies that will devastate the majority of people throughout the entire world for decades to come. And what was first called a decade of austerity and then later revised to the age of austerity, the G20 leaders, again, reminding our listeners, promised us decades of social cuts to government spending in order to combat the fiscal crisis that they have created by the bailouts and other subsidies and such to massive monopoly corporations and finance capital. So yeah, we point of the story is not to get diverted by the mainstream media by looking at you know, just images of a couple broken windows and burning cars, while the essence of the protests and the essence of what was happening behind closed doors is what we should be paying attention to.
Definitely. So we're going, I think we're gonna go to a quick commercial break, and we're gonna be coming back with Jamu, who's gonna be talking about the Caravana celebrations. Stay tuned, Radio Basics.
Your community radio,
CHRY
105.5.
When police did a crime, the Star reports it, and they show no shame because the government supports it. Extra, this is Radio Basic, revolutionizing radio. Tune in, CHRY 105.5 FM. Get your entertainment on, y'all. This is Melodic, and I'm just saying straight, yowza, Radio Basics.
Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5, another plug from our good friend Melodic, reggae artist from the United States, from New York, who's down here in Toronto for the summer. Now, every summer, people in Toronto blaze with the excitement of the Scotiabank Caravana Festival. The 43rd anniversary is going to be this Saturday at the X. It's the largest Caribbean festival in North America, presented by the Festival Management Committee. The three-week, and it goes on for 3 weeks, various activities, culminating this Saturday, attracting over 1 million participants annually, including hundreds of thousands of American tourists. The highlight being the parade and the celebration again this Saturday, July 31st. Now, on the phone right now, we have Jamu on, who's going to be talking about some issues regarding the funding of the Caravana Festival. In fact, Jamu wrote an article, or a response to an article that was published in the Toronto Star, in response to an article called Caravana to Dazzle on a Budget, that was published on July 19th in the Toronto Star. So, Jamu, are you going to be heading out this this Saturday to Caravana?
No, I generally boycott it, you know, but if I can get some comrades together, I definitely intend on going to give out information about what's going on with Caravana and the rape of this critical cultural resource. First thing I would like to say is that Caravana is a product of the Caribbean and African working class, both in the Caribbean in terms of a culture of resistance, and coming here to Canada, that was another way that the Caribbean working class realized that it could imprint itself on Canadian society around in 1967 when they were having the centenary celebrations around Canada, and they were essentially marched now on this cultural project. So they're saying this is a way that we can, you know, imprint ourselves. But in addition to that, they saw the cultural festival as a way to mobilize resources that could allow them to build cultural or community centers, as well as to provide scholarships to working class youth from the African and Caribbean community. So, and yet, those initiatives still haven't been realized, in spite of the fact that Caravana is generating over $438 million per year, making it the largest festival in Canada.
For sure, in terms of, and even in terms of the amount of people it attracts.
Absolutely, over 1.2 million people.
And that's, I mean, that's an incredible number. And as you said, a festival that really originated in the community, that was community run for how many years? Can you talk about that, the progression in terms of where or what body essentially has been designated the responsibility of organizing the festival financially as well as logistically, and how that has changed over the years, and what kind of support, if any, they've received from all three levels of government in Canada?
Right. From the outset, Caravana has been starved of financial resources from the different levels of government. So you had the Caribbean Cultural Committee who was organizing the festival up until 2006, when you had a takeover of this festival by the city. And what they did was essentially an economic white meal or blackmail of the festival by insisting that the people who are running the festival will no longer be able to run it, or if they're running it, they will not receive funding from the city. The federal government and Ontario government also, you know, piped in and took a similar position. essentially forced, you know, the community-based people who have been organizing this festival.
So initially, this group that was organizing the festival was community-based, was locally based, had some sort of representation from, you know, the people who participate in the festival, the communities that are behind the festival.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. But here you have essentially volunteers running a multi-million-dollar festival without adequate funding to operate this organization. In the same way that you have the Toronto International Film Festival as a two-week festival, but yet it has an year-round operation adequately financed to carry out the work to get essentially the critical skills and knowledge that they need to run a multi-million dollar organization. And the festival, that wasn't the case with Caravan, and it's still not the case where it's been adequately funded by these new operators, who essentially are operating in a similar fashion as British colonialism did in Africa. We have indirect rule, where the colonialists came, they kept the same old regime, native regime that were in place, and essentially have them administering British colonialism in Africa. That is what's going on right now, the Festival Management Committee. So the people that are there, African and Caribbean peoples, you have South Asian, you have African, you have East Asian, Chinese that are running it. But essentially, they're running it on behalf of the city and corporate interests with no commitment to using these resources to essentially facilitate community development for the African and Caribbean community. So it's something that the community must organize to really, really wrest control from the people who are running it now, because this is the largest collective asset of this working class community, because irrespective of how middle-class elements within these communities are posturing around Caravana, this is a product of the working class. And, you know, this is too important a collective resource for us to just let essentially white capital and neo-colonial elements, these racialized communities, maintain control of this festival.
So essentially the Festival Management Committee that you're talking about, which is this, a project put aside by the city, and yet receives, as you said in the article that you submitted to the Toronto Star, received not a penny from the federal government and receives very inadequate funding from the city as well. Does it receive funding from the province?
It received $484,000 from the province from a different part of funding.
Yeah.
But just to put things in perspective, a year ago, actually in April 2009, the government of Ontario gave out $43 million to six cultural organizations here in Ontario. And these are all reflective of Anglo-Canadian cultural dominance. You have the Arts Gallery of Ontario, which received $10 million in operational grants, which means that every year going forward, they can count on that $10 million, you know, annually as an operational grant. In addition to that, they got a one-off gift of $8.6 million. The Royal Ontario Museum, from that $43 million, they received $9 million, and a one-off funding of $7.2 million. Caravana doesn't see this type of funding, in spite of the fact that it is generating much more than each of these white cultural organizations. You also had even other organizations getting money, like, for example, you have Ontario Science Centre, the Royal Botanical Gardens, Ontario Heritage Trust. They got between $2.5 million to $3 million out of that pot of funding in April 2009. So what's very clear is there's a certain racist and a racial criteria.
A cultural racism.
A
cultural racism in regards, most definitely. I mean, in terms of when you're talking about these other events, even when we look at federal government funding, as you say in your article, being like, you know, $1 million and $1.5 million to like the Carnival de Quebec, Calgary Stampede, Stratford Shakespeare Festival, you know, $3 million in fact to the Shakespeare Festival, as opposed to not a penny being given to Caravana from the federal government in 2010. And
right,
once again, as you say, looking at not only the number of people that these festivals bring out, but the amount of revenue they generate. There's no other explanation for it as to deliberate discrimination against a festival that does come out of the Caribbean, does come out of a racialized community, as well as you put forward, a working class community within the country. And when you talk about these other events, they're largely inaccessible to, as far as I know, you know, people that I interact with, or I'm sure listeners would also respond to this in a positive way, that like a lot of these festivals are inaccessible to working class people. They don't attend it.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to Caravana, which is, as you put forward, quite the opposite.
No, definitely, that's the case. And you know, generally people think that the capitalists think in self-interested way, or the state think in self-interested way to facilitate, the accumulation of capital or the generation of profit. But last year, the federal government took in tax receipts $109 as a result of Caravana, and last year it only gave $415,000 from that marquee tourism funding allotment that they have. So imagine they're getting $109 million in tax revenue, but gave only $415,000. This year they gave zero.
And that's not even to count, obviously, all the money that's spent by, that's just the tax revenue. So if taxes only consist of about 5 to 10% of what the money that's actually spent by people who attend the festival, then we're talking about the hundreds of millions and billions of dollars that are spent, right?
No, absolutely. And this is also a 2-week festival.
Absolutely.
And it can generate $438 million. But yet, the government have the arrogance of ignoring the economic impact of this festival, and largely it has to do with who the people are
exactly
that have organized and created this festival.
So, John, just to draw out the implications a bit, like, well, I mean, as you pointed out, the potential, significance that these resources could have on the community if it was directed towards the African Canadian working class, which we should say is a community, is a part of Canada's history going back hundreds of years, but yet perpetually seems like it's outside mainstream culture. It's constantly marginalized and pushed outside mainstream culture, right? Like,
right.
You know, Africville, a colony of African Canadians going back hundreds of years, yet demolished and as if it never really existed. What is the significance?
Or was not desired to exist.
Yeah, what is the significance of these types of resources constantly being basically robbed, in effect, or directed away from African working class people?
Well, the significance of that, that it keeps the community economically marginalized, politically marginalized, and socially marginalized, because it doesn't have that economic base where it can either pursue a different economic model. Because when I look at Caravana as a cultural festival, and I see it as a collective resource that the Caribbean and the African community, and it's also Caribbean community, you have to realize that the Caribbean is a very multinational project, because you have South Asian who have contributed to the festival since it was created, by African people there. You have Chinese that are there. You have different people who are there contributing to it, even though the creators, the originators, are African people. But, we see here in Toronto, you have South Asian from the Caribbean, very much a part of this. So now this has become a multinational project, in spite of how it originates. So it must benefit.
Sure.
It must benefit those creators. What I'm hoping for, that if we take an alternative approach to ownership of the institutions that would service Caravana, is that we create collective economic institutions. For example, having worker-owned economic units that would provide services or provide goods that are connected to it. So again, the people who would benefit from it would be the workers. Mm-hmm. For example, if you have a museum, it would be owned by the workers and everybody who are there. And part of the returns or the surplus or net income would also go towards community development. Because
absolutely,
we're not just trying to integrate ourselves into capitalist Canada with all its exploitation. We're trying to, develop, while in the mix of capitalism, a different model, a very transitional model of economic democracy and economic running that teach workers to manage economic resources, but also prepare them for the future society where it's not, where we don't have the exploitation of labor by a few.
Absolutely.
Where we have workers running and governing society on the economic level and the political level.
For sure. So that this cannot be the Scotiabank Caravan Festival, but, you know, truly the, you know, Caribbean communities or the Community Caravan Festival, you know.
Yeah, People's Festival.
People's Festival, exactly. Yeah. You know, the final point I wanted to put forward was in terms of Caravana, you know, the discussion that's taken place around it and how it's presented within, you know, mainstream circles, within, you know, as you put it, white supremacist, you know, power structure, etc. In regards to Caravana is blatantly racist when they talk about, you know, the security concerns regarding the individuals that are there, you know, the high police presence and policing of the festival.
Yeah. You know, in fact, just to give a little anecdote, one of our comrades in Basics attended a party last year where at a nightclub they far, far oversold tickets far beyond the venue's capacity. And when people were upset outside the venue that they weren't able to attend and they wanted their money back, the police attacked the crowd and arrested a number of people, including a Basics member who eventually, I believe, caught charges for getting beat up by the police. But yet the discourse is that actually it's the people that we have to fear.
Or not only that, but that in the case of Caravana is presented and the individuals and the bodies that are present at Caravana, especially whether they're, you know, coming from the States or whatever, are presented as a concern and as a security threat for the city, as opposed to, if you look at, you know, the violence, just for example, like after a hockey match or whatever, however, whenever else there's been like a riot or any kind of violence in when there's a large grouping of people, it hasn't been at something like Caravana or a festival of the like. In fact, when we talk about the G20 and talk about all those police cars that were burned down, I think Naomi Klein, despite all the other ridiculous statements she made in regards to the G20, made a pretty revealing comment that, in fact, there has been a case in Canadian history when more police cars were torched and there was more violence. And that was after, you know, a hockey match just a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, in Montreal. For them, they don't need to even, the hockey fans who are largely white, they don't even need to lose a game in a series.
That's when they win.
A game in a series, and they would burn police car in Montreal, turn police car over. But yeah, you don't hear thousands being arrested. You don't hear people being shot down in the street.
Or you don't hear hockey matches being talked about as like a security threat, as opposed to Caravana.
To Canadian society.
No, because hockey is a central part of this settler project in Canada. So it's a part, it's not an aberration. So if this thing happened, they would say, okay, you know, young people, youth will be youth. You know, boys will be boys, and these things happen, shit happens. But they don't take that type of attitude to Caravana where there's not violence going on in the place, and we still find those things going on. But, you know, at the bottom, of, you know, at the end of the day, is that the bodies that are seen as a part of the cultural project as Caravana, you know, are always seen as dangerous bodies. They must be policed, they must be regimented, and especially when race and class intersect, then it's even much more dangerous that they're raced, but they're also classed in a way that they are part of a disfavored class of people largely. They still have middle class elements from the Caribbean who visit and are part of it. Mm-hmm. But even sometimes when they call these people middle class, they're really, you know, working class people are able to consume trinkets that make them feel like they're part of a class that they're not. So, you know, I can be excused for even mentioning, you know, representing them as middle class, but it's really middle income group.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll party with the working
family. So, Jamo, I'm afraid we have to cut off there because we have some other programming for the show. But, you know, we jumped right into our discussion, and our introduction of you, brother, was hardly, it was less than satisfactory. So I just wanted to bring attention to the fact that you are, you know, a tireless activist in Canadian Union of Public Employees, and that you ran a really important campaign for the leadership of QP Ontario against Sid Ryan, if I'm not mistaken, right?
And yeah, Sid Ryan and later on Fred Hahn, who is now the president.
Yeah.
Yeah, my apologies for shirking that introduction. And in fact, Jamu, a tireless activist in terms of the, not only in the African community in Toronto, but just in general, on numerous issues. In fact, just recently organized an evening around police brutality and police containment just last Sunday. So he's somebody that's been working tirelessly on a number of issues. And you'll definitely hear him on the show again.
Okay, and thanks a lot, Brother Steve, as well as Brother Kabir.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jamu.
Thanks for providing this forum.
Absolutely, no doubt. Anytime. That's a Jamu Ndongwaya. Thank you, brother.
Okay, take care, comrade. Bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, let's go to a track, and we're going to come back with Cynthia Palmaria from the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body. This is Robbed by Quanche of Vaughn and Oakwood.
Up in the Africville when they move all the blacks to the helm and they can't be for rent. My mother always told me, those who live in glass houses shall not throw stones. Real talk. Our education getting robbed by the government. You get to check, you getting robbed by the government. Our native people got robbed by the government. Who really the thieves they portray as you and me? Yeah. The working class getting robbed by the government. Poor people evicted from condos and luxury. The truth by media get robbed cause of government. Who really the thieves they show you what's they calling me a thief. Charging me with robbery and breach of the peace. But can we take a look upon these beasts? They the ones that come and shoot us down in the streets. The step days back to the clowns from the east. I'm talking about Europeans, English and French. Came to this land, found man, made friends and ensnaked them. Took advantage of trust and then raped them. Old Canada, the land stolen from the natives and First Nations. People driven to starvation. They kidnapped their children, put them in the placements. Forced assimilation, it's like slave breaking. Now enough of them is sniffing glue or staying wasted. Just another race. Erased more recent. They thinking that this minimum wage is decent. Taking 15% off the checks we receiving. We can't go to school cause we banned for no reason. Our education getting robbed by the government. You get your check, you getting robbed by the government. Our native people got robbed by the government. Who really the thieves they portray as you and me? Yeah. The working class getting robbed by the government. Poor people evicted from condos and luxury. The truth by media get robbed cause of government. Who really the thieves they show you on TV? The same schools assholes make schools traps that'll leave you with a case before class. Trouble waiting on the app for you to get out of the bin. Cause with a criminal record you can't get employment. So they stay employed. No takers in the courthouse to go and inform the snort makers in the courthouse to go and inform the principal and the staff too. Till you and your boys ain't allowed in the classroom. Now that's robbery. So how could the queen represent my country and charge me with larceny? Further with the fuckery, it's hard to be humble when I see what they do in the region and jungle. TCHC trying to come up on the double. History repeats itself. It's no puzzle. It's exactly what happened to Africville when they move all the blacks to the helm and they can't be for real. Education getting robbed by the government. You get your check, you getting robbed by the government. Our native people got robbed by the government. Who really the thieves they portray as you and me? Yeah. The working class getting robbed by the government. Poor people evicted from condos and luxury. The truth by media get robbed cause of government. Who really the thieves they show you on TV?
You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM, broadcasting at 158 watts at 105.5 FM, on the World Wide Web at chry.fm, and on the Rogers Digital Network, channel 945.
Radio Basics, welcome back, brothers and sisters. For the final segment of our show, we're going to be interviewing an activist here in Toronto, Cynthia Palmaria, of the Filipino community and an activist with the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body. And she's going to be talking to us tonight about a conference coming up in Montreal from October 13th to 16th of August called the Montreal International Women's Conference, being hosted by the Montreal group Women of Diverse Origins and the International League of People Struggles. And Cynthia is on the line with us tonight. Cynthia, are you there?
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Cynthia. Thank you for being on the line with us tonight.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone.
So maybe you can just tell us a little bit first about the work that the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body is doing in Toronto. And, you know, then, you know, why are you taking on this conference and why are you promoting this conference?
Okay. Well, the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body was initially founded in 2007 here in Toronto. Hello?
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yes. So the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body was founded in 2007, and it's composed of progressive organizations, neighborhood organizations, individuals, and friends who wanted to celebrate the Women's Day together. And we had a basis of unity, which is we wanted to be heard, we wanted to be seen as migrant women and supporters and friends of migrant women who are of feminist background. And since then, we've been able to celebrate it together. We've been growing together. And it's comprised of different communities. So this year, we wanted to take part not just in the women's a women's celebration, Women's Day celebration, but also because we wanted to move together, move forward together with the different communities in solidarity. We took on this International Women's Conference, and we became the Toronto Organizing Committee in order to take part and become a member of the International Women's Alliance, which is the aim of this conference, which is happening in Montreal in August of 2010.
Yeah, I see that the subtitle of the conference, and in fact one of the goals, is to build a global militant women's movement for the 21st century. And I see that the topics of the plenary sessions and the workshops of the conference include imperialist globalization, its impact on women, women's resistance to oppression and exploitation, and building alternatives to these structures of oppression and exploitation of women.
That's right. We have a very exciting lineup of speakers, and we wanted to make sure that we cover all the different components of the impact on imperialism on women. And so we made sure that we have different speakers from different backgrounds, from different parts of the world, in order for us to be able to educate ourselves while we're assessing the women's movement in the past, to celebrate their successes, review the setbacks, and of course, looking into how we can move forward together as a strong anti-imperialist global movement composed of progressive women's groups all over the world.
Mm-hmm. So why do you find that it's necessary to build a new alliance at this moment in history? There are many, many women's alliances on an international basis, many women's forums within and outside the United Nations. Why is it necessary at this moment to build this women's alliance? And how does it distinguish itself from much of the women's movement that already exists, or the women's movements, I should say?
It's important for us to take part in this initiative because, as we can see, the situation worldwide is becoming worse. And whether you are in the third world country or even in the first world countries, we can see that the situation is getting worse for women, whether they're coming from, the workers, whether they're the workers, the peasants, the progressive women all over the world. It's just the situation within the global context is becoming worse. And we can see that, for one thing, we decided to have this conference this year because it's the celebration of the 100th year of the centennial of the Toiling Women's Movement. And so for us, it's important to stress that this is a gathering of anti-imperialist women's groups. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the important aspects of this conference. Although, like you said, there are many gatherings of women, we have to stress the fact that this is an anti-imperialist and perspective that we're trying to move forward.
So how does 2010 mark the 100th year of the birth of the the Toiling Women's Movement?
Well, this is when, I guess, looking back in history, that's when they had started to proclaim the international. This is where they proclaimed the international aspect of the Women's Day, and so this is back in Europe when they decided that. This is now going to become, they wanted to put a working class perspective into the Women's Day celebration.
I see.
And so that's what we, that's why we decided to commemorate this, because we have to put we have to put an emphasis on the working class perspective of the women's movement all over the world and the anti-imperialist stance.
So for our listeners listening in live or maybe downloading our show later who may be interested in getting involved, what would you recommend, websites to check out or maybe organizations to plug into in the near future?
Yes. For those who are interested, they can go to the website, which is niwc2010.wordpress.com to find out more information about it. Or they can keep in touch with the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body. And our email address is which is our email address.
Yes.
And then from there, we'll be able to provide more information about the conference and how they can participate in this important gathering of women internationally.
If people didn't get your contacts, they can just go to basicsnews.ca. And in fact, the conference and your contacts are linked from our website.
Which is wonderful because then it's more available to people out there.
Absolutely. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Cynthia, before we conclude?
Well, I just wanted to encourage whether they're individuals, progressive organizations, institutions. We are calling on everyone, progressive women, to come and participate and be part of this important international gathering. So again, the Montreal International Women's Conference entitled For a Militant Global Women's Movement in the 21st Century.
Mm-hmm.
Please participate. We would love to hear about your experiences and how we can link together as a progressive organization, especially here in Toronto and worldwide.
Absolutely. And I've had people ask me this question in the last couple of weeks as well. Is our brothers invited to attend as well?
Yes, definitely. We believe in the importance of education, and mm-hmm. we welcome the brothers to come and educate themselves.
Yes.
Of course, asking to respect the space of women.
Absolutely.
Because we believe that the women's oppression is contributed not just by the men, but it's a society, it's within the society that we need to address. And so men are welcome in the conference, of course, respecting the women's space in the conference.
Absolutely. In fact, I was just speaking to a brother who we just had on interviewing a couple of weeks ago, Ajama Nungwaya. And he was like, wow, I'd really like to attend this conference. But he thought it was under the impression that it was only for women. And, you know, we were quite conscious that, you know, we have to respect the boundaries and that this. But I'm certainly looking forward to coming and educating myself on the issues. Incredible topics for the conference, including women workers fighting exploitation, women in migration, women fighting racism, discrimination and genocide, the struggles of indigenous women, women resisting wars of imperialist aggression, women in religion, women's sexual orientation and identities, women in health, violence against women, women's experiences with socialism and national liberation, women resisting developmental aggression, and women from the peasantry and rural lands and their struggles. And certainly these are issues that are by no means restricted to the concern or interest of just women. So I'm going, and I definitely encourage other brothers out there listening who are interested in learning about these topics to come and, you know, educate themselves as well. And absolutely, because without, you know, women's liberation, human liberation is impossible.
That's right. So I hope to see everyone. And if you need more information, we have our groups here, Migrante Ontario, the Basics, mm-hmm. Basics Community Newspaper. We have the Canadian Heart. And we have QP locals also who are participating, are part of the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body. So we can get in touch with any of those organizations to find out more about our conference.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cynthia, thank you so much for being on the line with us tonight.
Thank you, Steve, for interviewing.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
That was Cynthia Palmeria of the Migrant Women's Coordinating Body and Migrante Ontario. Let's go to a track. We'll be right back. This is Cesaria Avora, the really, you know, a hero of folk music from Cabo Verde. Tur dia e dia. This is Cesaria Avora.
acabou tem pressa, esse mundo é mais. Fica só curtição, tá fazer parte desse mundo. Não é novinha, cheio além, na cabeça da cama. Por isso nunca avisou, vê se não lê pro dia a dia. Viver mais vagar, acabou tem pressa, esse mundo é mais. Fica só curtição, tá fazer parte desse mundo. Mãe novinha, cheio talento, nunca pensei no seu amor. Por isso não tá visão, viver solito dia a dia. Esse mundo é falso, acabou viver por atacar. Viver nesta mão, cheio de ironia. E já curtiu tudo devagarinho, mas tudo dá. Viver saborar, amor e alegria. Esse mundo é falso, acabou viver. Viver nas camas, cheio de ironia. Me já curtiu tudo a delina com o lugar. Viver de sabura, amor e alegria. Fazer parte deste novo inverno. Mãe novinha, cheio de talento, mata a vista da cada mão. Por isso nunca avisou e vê-se no lito dia a dia. Esse mundo é falso, acabou viver por atacar. Viver na chama, cheio de ironia. Ninja um curtido, vagarinho, a todo lugar. Viver de sabura, amor e alegria. Viver nesta alma, cheio de ironia. Me já curti tudo a carinha, tudo mudar. Viver de sabura, amor e alegria. Viver nas camas, cheio de ironia. Me já curtir tudo devagarinho, mas tudo mudar. Viver com sabor, amor e alegria.
HRY 105.5 FM, Radio Basics.
Kabir, Steve, that's all we got for tonight. You can check out our back shows, our archives, by linking our website, basicsnews.ca. And we just want to remind our listeners that Radio Basics here, in its wonderful home, CHRY, our program is actually part of Basics Free Community Newsletter, which is a people's news organization, a people's media organization that is especially known for the production of Basics Free Community Newsletter, a newspaper produced every 2 months, distributed widely across working class communities in Toronto. If you didn't already know, holler at us, email us, call us. I'm still here. I'll be here in the studio for a little while longer. 416-736-5656. If you want to get involved, if you want more information, you want to know how we're doing what we're doing or talking about what we're talking about, if you're hearing some things on our radio program that you ain't hearing on a lot of other radio stations, likely on this radio station, you know, CHRY is a true community radio station. So this is why we're able to do what we do here at CHRY. So please support, please donate. When you can, but
definitely, and you know, when we come on and talk, I know it was pretty good to hear at the last, actually at that police brutality event that Ajama organized, you know, hearing people from the audience saying they listen to the show on a daily basis or on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. you know, take in or even recognize their voices from the show. That's always good to hear. So it's always good to know that people are listening as well. So just, you know, give us a call and not only that, but not only are we linked to a community media project, but we're reporting on struggles that, you know, us as individuals and us mm-hmm. as an organization definitely have a role in. We're talking about M1M, we're talking about the Women's Conference, we're talking about
the Justice for Alwi campaign, which you're a part of, Kabir. I had a funny anecdote that I wanted to interject with, you know, Kabir here with another brother, Martin Jidra, were speaking on behalf of the Justice for Alwi campaign at an event on racial profiling and police brutality held at OISE last weekend, I believe it was, Kabir.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the Globe and Mail came and wrote a terribly unrepresentative article of the event and how it played out with a terribly cropped picture of Kabir and the some of the other panelists who were at the event. And I would encourage you to type in racial profiling and Kabir Joshi's name into Google. Kabir Joshi. This is why. Because Kabir is a little humble and modest here. But the reason is that you got to read the comments in response to the terribly written article, mind you. But the types of comments that were written by people. And by a certain type of people who I think are attracted to commenting on you know, National Post and Globe and Mail articles, tends to be a certain demographic of people, probably not representative of everybody's opinions. But the incredibly racist garbage that people put out, especially on comment sections in newspapers, if you want to, it kind of like the comments themselves, are enough proof that there is a problem of racism, and particularly the attacks on working class racialized communities. One of the comments, I believe, what said that black people are criminal, they need to be policed. Yeah. Stuff as outrageous as that.
The reason that there's racial profiling is that the black community is the most violent community in Toronto, I think was one of the comments, like almost word for word. But and even like relating to Care Bannon, there was like a number of comments like, let's see how many shootings there are next week or something, you know.
Yeah.
So I mean, coming back to the beginning of the show. Actually, thanks Steve for letting the any undercovers or police watching my full name typed out. But yeah, no, it's an interesting piece to look at, as opposed to Basics that was there, and that that produces articles based on struggles we actually partake in and have a role in. So definitely, if you want to get involved, if you want to know anything else about the work that we do, the G20 organizing is another thing. We had a show 2 weeks ago on that, you know, people relating their experiences from the demonstrations, people that were arrested, people that were abused and assaulted by police officers as part of that. And obviously we see that continuing with the recent OCAP demonstrations, and obviously that's a level of violence that's enacted on racialized communities on a daily basis.
So we encourage people to contact us, man. Basics.canada@gmail.com. Holler at us here at the radio station, 416-736-5656. Check out our website, basicsnews.ca, and get in contact with us, because we can't do what we do without the support of the people, without more and more people constantly getting involved in our project. How is it that we're going to struggle and improve our situation if we don't even have the ability to command an opinion or a perspective on how our actual lives are playing out and how our struggles are unfolding? The media is an important part of our struggle, and this is why we do what we do. So even if you can take on as little as handing out basics in your neighborhood door to door, then hit us up. You know, get in where you fit in. That's all I got for tonight. We're gonna go out with a track, Lupe Fiasco, off his Food and Liquor album, American Terrorist. This is Steve De Silva, and I'm here with what do you want to call yourself then?
Signing off for this week. We'll see you next week. Radio Basics, CHRY 105.5. Have a good Care Banner, everybody.
Close your mind. Close your eyes. See with your heart. How do you forgive the murderer of your father? The ink of a scholar is worth 1,000 times more than the blood of a martyr. We came through the storm, nooses on our necks, and a smallpox blanket to keep us warm on a 747 on the Pentagon lawn. Wake up, the alarm clock is connected to a bomb. Anthrax lab on a West Virginia farm. Shorty ain't learned to walk, already heavily harmed. Camouflage.
large Taurus, Bibles and glorious Qurans, the books that take you to heaven and let you meet the Lord there, have become misinterpreted reasons for warfare, reread them with blind eyes, I guarantee you there's more there, rich must be blind cause they ain't see the poor there. Need to open up a park, just close 10 schools. We don't need them. Can you please call the fire department? They down here marching for freedom. Burn down their TVs, turn their TVs on, the teacher let move.
The more money that they make, the more money that they make, the better and better they live. Whatever they want to take, whatever they want to take, whatever, whatever it is. The more that you want to learn, the more that you try to learn, the better and better it gets.
Not cause things the same, but cause we like the same color, and that's gray, now that's May. Can't burn this cross, cause he can't afford the gasoline. Now if a Muslim woman's trapped with a bomb on the bus, with the seconds running, give you the jitters. Just imagine an American-based Christian organization planning the poison water supplies to bring the second coming quicker. Nigga, they ain't living properly. Wreck them off with no democracy. Turn their whole culture to a mockery. Give them Coca-Cola for their property. Give them guns, get them young, give them fun. But if they ain't giving it up, then they ain't getting none. And don't give them all, nah, man, just give them some. It's the paper, some of these cops must be Al-Qaeda, nigga,
The more money that they make, the more money that they make, the better and better they live. Whatever they wanna take, whatever they wanna take, whatever, whatever it is. The more that you wanna learn, the more that you try to learn, the better and better it gets. America,
give yellow man tool, make them railroad filler. Also give them pen, make them pull gold from river. Give black man crack, Glock and dings. Give red man craps, slot machines. I bring it back, 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 bring it back. Don't give the black man food, give the red man liquor. Red man fool, black man nigga. Give yellow man tool, make them railroad filler. Also give them pen, make them pull gold from river. Give black man crack, blocks and ting. Give the red man craps, slot machines. And bring it back, 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 bring it back.